This recording is a production of the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee. This presentation was recorded at Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2022, held at Horizon Mennonite School in Hagerstown, Maryland, on March 4 and 5.
Welcome to all to this workshop on tools for evaluating the teachers. I would like to, this is a workshop again, not a lecture, but I do have a few thoughts to open up, and then I would like to talk about the tools. What are the tools that are available to the board to evaluate their teachers? I would like to look first at the need. Why do we need to do this? The goal, what do we hope to accomplish? And then we want to look at some types of evaluation and then look at the tools. So let's talk about the need first. What's the need? Why does a board need to evaluate its staff?
Constant change.
Pardon?
Just constant change.
Just constant change. Changing what?
Sometimes annoying values.
Okay. Certainly some things change. Why else would we need to, why are we doing this?
To see whether our goals are being met.
All right. Okay. Do you know what your goals are? I hope so. How many of you have ever taught school yourself? Okay, a few of you. Great. That's a great benefit to have board members who have taught. Currently, two of the three. Yeah, just realized there's three of them actually now that are former teachers on the school board where I teach. That's a blessing because it gives perspective into the whole picture. So those of you who have experienced teaching, if you've taught for more than 1 year, how many of you would say that second and third year went better than the first year? That's kind of like a duh question, but of course. Because experience itself is a great teacher. So one of the reasons that boards need to evaluate their teachers is because there may be some areas where, and even with experienced teachers, there may be some things that need to be brushed up on a little bit. You can get a little lazy after a while. You've taught for a number of years, and you kind of have your system, and after a while, you're just not really applying yourself like you ought to. It's a tendency. And so, and sometimes there are just, think of it this way, that this, maybe it's not going so well for this teacher right now. There needs to be evaluation. Why is it not going well? Maybe it's actually a very valuable gem that you have there. It just needs some polishing. And so what can the school board do to help in that situation? Another reason might be, a number of years ago, one of my co-teachers, great guy, was teaching 7th and 8th, but it was just a little bit more academically than what he could handle. And so the school board made the determination that, he's great guy, but you'd be better utilized in 5th and 6th grade rather than 7th and 8th. And it went better. So, sometimes our assets are just misplaced. It's not that this person shouldn't be teaching in our school. Maybe they would actually be better in another place. Our second grade teacher this year is going to be teaching 5th and 6th next year. I'm quite convinced she'll do fine, if not excellent. So we need to, and how we, the evaluation that we go through helps us determine those things. There's a third reason that I believe we should do this, and that is, sometimes value is right in front of us, and we don't realize it until we suddenly don't have it. And it might be possible that you have a teacher in your school that's really valuable, does more than what you really realize they're doing, and suddenly next year when they're not there, you'll realize how many cracks they were filling in. And so we really need to be doing a thorough evaluation of our staff to recognize that here's a person that is really valuable on the team. We don't want to lose them. Let's make sure. You know, the Apostle Paul had that happen to him. Remember after his first missionary journey, he and Barnabas were talking about going back to the churches that they had established. And Barnabas said, well, let's take John Mark with us again. And Paul said, absolutely not. That guy, he gave up partway through the journey. We don't need slackers. Okay, I'm reading more. Maybe I'm paraphrasing here. I don't know what the conversation was exactly. But the contention was so great. You know, at the end of his life, you know what Paul said? He's sitting in prison, and he writes to Timothy. In 2 Timothy 4, verse 11, he said, only Luke is with me. Take Mark and bring him with thee, for he is profitable to me for the ministry. I believe in that verse we have recorded that the Apostle Paul realized he made a mistake. John Mark was valuable, but he lost the opportunity to work with him because of a decision he made. But we need to evaluate for those reasons, I believe. So what's the goal here? What's the goal? What do you want your school to be? At lunchtime, we had this little bit of discussion about the whole finances thing and paying teachers and all of that. And I asked the question, and I'll ask it here. How many of you think that Christian education is expensive?
Very. Very.
Very. Okay. Is it okay if I disagree with you? Okay. I'm going to disagree, and I'm going to tell you why I disagree. The farm right around the school where I teach was sold a number of years ago. It's about 110 acres. And this is back, I don't know what, 8 years ago, 9 years ago? About 100 acres tillable. It sold for over $2 million. Was that expensive? Mm-mm. No? See, the folks that bought it have a waste business where they go around to like the Tyson Chicken Plant, dairy processing places, and they get their wastewater. And they spread it on the fields. And by DEP regulations, they can only put so much per acre every year. It's part of their business. Was it an expense? Yes. But more than that, it was an investment. It was an investment. Without that land, they can't do their business. I propose to you that Christian education is not expensive, it's an investment. Yes, there is an expense there. I recognize we're putting money out, but it's an investment. And so when we think about that in that way, you know, with how many of you are businessmen in here? Well, good for you. I told my wife if I ever talk seriously about starting a business, she should find the biggest frying pan she has and just clunk me good, because it wouldn't work. Wouldn't be a good idea. But God bless you. God called you to that. That's great. When you run your business, what do you want? I mean, you're going to buy that new piece of equipment, whatever tool. You want your business to be profitable, right? You have a goal in mind. So what's the goal in mind? You know, the parents are putting out thousands of dollars every year for their children's education, right? Shouldn't they get the most they can for their money? Right? So part of evaluating our teachers is to give our patrons a good return on their investment. They're investing hard-earned money in their children's education. They really ought to get something worthwhile. And the children, when they leave the classroom at the end of their formal schooling, they should be able to contribute something in the kingdom, in society. They ought to have those tools that they can lead a productive life. And so we really want, we want our students to have an excellent learning experience. And if that's going to happen, that means we have to evaluate our teachers. We have to decide, are these people qualified? Are they qualified? I challenge you sometime. I don't think I'm going to turn to these verses, but Proverbs 24, 3 and 4. Look at those verses. It talks about wisdom, understanding, and knowledge in reference to a house. Think about those verses. All right, so there are different types of evaluation, obviously. There's basically three aspects that I'd like to focus on today. The board needs to be evaluating their teachers scholastically. How can they do with the academics? All right? I also think that a teacher is not just a knowledge dispensing machine. They're a person. They have likes and dislikes. They have a personality. Some are quiet. One of my co-teachers is very quiet. But she does an excellent job in the classroom. Her classroom is, things happen like they ought to. She's in control. You don't have to be loud and boisterous. There's all manner of personalities that can make good teachers. But socially, we need to evaluate them socially. How do they interact with people? And of course, spiritually. We need to evaluate them spiritually. Because, as Brother Arlen just said, they're teaching. By their values. And students will know the teacher's values. They'll know if the volleyball game is more important than summer Bible school. They'll know. They'll know if skiing is more important than street meetings. Right? They're going to know these. And I'm not saying that skiing and volleyball games are wrong. Okay? But the students will know what the teacher's values are. They smell that. So here's a question for you. Which is more important? Which is most important of the three?
What's the definition of integrity?
What's the definition of integrity? Okay. Good question. Somebody know? Sure, exactly right. Wholeness. All right. So what did you mean by asking that question?
Well, integrity is not part of the definition of a certain sense of completeness.
So in other words, you want somebody who's got all three.
I'm asking a question. When you ask what's the most important, I think there's an aspect to it of a complete certain roundedness in all of them. Now, there's variations of what you expect in your teacher perception. Okay. What's your definition? That kind of thing. But I think there needs to be an aspect of completeness in the teacher. That's what I asked.
Okay. Anyone else? I asked the question not because I believe that any one of them is any more important than the other. You know, there are some very sincere, godly people in our churches that I, as a principal, I absolutely don't want in the classroom, because teaching is not their gift. And we need to be okay with that. Just because a person is a good brother or sister in the church does not mean that they're qualified in the classroom. On the other hand, just because somebody is a real brainiac doesn't mean, that's why we have Christian schools. Because there are people in this world who are much, much greater education than what I have. Could probably explain the concepts in science and math far better than I can. But the reason we don't send our children to those kinds of schools is because of the spiritual influence that's there, right? And so, for each one of your schools, you're going to have to decide what with each individual. Look at them as a whole. Like the brother said, I appreciate that thought about integrity, because it's the whole package. What's the whole package we're getting here? And you know what? Jesus went back to heaven, so he's not available. It'd be nice if Jesus could teach in our schools. But he's sitting at the right hand of the throne of God, and he's not available. So he's tasked us as humans to do it, and we're not Jesus. We're not perfect. And each of us can grow. All right, so what are the tools? Let's hear about them. What are the tools that a board can use? I don't care if you want to talk about scholastically, socially, or spiritually, but what are some tools that a school board can use to evaluate their staff? Yes?
Personal observation.
Ah. The two eyes God gave you. That kind of means you need to be at school sometimes, right? You're going to actually have to be there and observe the teacher in action. All right? Good.
Look at their Facebook.
Look at their Facebook. Now, what do you think we'll learn if we do that?
You can learn a lot.
Yeah, probably more than what you want to know maybe sometimes. Mm-hmm. Well, school board's going to have a hard time doing that one on me, but...
Be socially involved with them, maybe outside of school.
Okay. In other words, get to know them other than just how they're functioning in the classroom. Get to know them as an individual. Okay? Anyone else?
Ask your children.
Pardon?
Ask your children.
Ask your children. Okay?
But ask the right questions.
Oh, please define the right questions.
That's what you're here for.
I'm here to lead the discussion. I know you have teaching experience, so go.
Well, I was just thinking about a parent that asked their child every day when they came home from school, did you get punished today? That instills in the child's mind perspective of who this teacher is. Mm-hmm. That isn't accurate. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I thought about actually bringing some tools along for this workshop, and then I decided no. But, you know, a hammer. We all know what a hammer is. They're made for certain things. You have the head, which is used to drive the nail, and a lot of hammers, not all hammers, but they have claws on the backside for pulling nails out. Those claws are not meant to be used as a hatchet, right? A screwdriver, it's made to turn a screw in or out. It's not made as a pry bar. So the brother says, ask your children. Yeah, that's fine. And as Melvin Ray said, be careful what questions you ask. I would also say, don't just take what your child says. because I remember when I was a boy, the principal at the school where I went, he told the parents at that parent-teachers meeting, I'll make a deal with you. If you believe half of what your children say when they come home from school, I'll believe half of what they say when they come to school. You know, children have their own perspective, and in their minds, it's the way it is. They're just like their parents. We parents have our perspective, and to us, that's the way it is, when it may not actually be so. But children, especially because of their limited understanding, sometimes read into things that aren't there. They misinterpret things. And so you got to be very, very careful about taking a child's word as the truth. I'm not saying that you can't learn something from a child. You can. I would say before you take it as the truth, check with the teacher, because it may not be quite like that. Any other tools?
Just a suggestion on a good question to ask. Ask your child, so what did you learn at school today? Mm-hmm. And if you do that often enough, you'll soon get a feel as to whether there's anything being gotten across or not. Mm-hmm. But there again, don't take the child's answer on nothing.
Yeah. Right. And I would add to that, even ask, what did you learn in math today? And maybe today was mostly review. Well, what'd you learn this week? All right. Surely in the last week you learned something. So certainly ask those. How many of you think that the grade book is a tool for evaluating the teacher? Okay, what are the positives? You know, every tool has its proper use and improper use. So what are the pluses of using the grade book? What does the grade book do?
You might provide a comparison from years prior. So I had a parent tell me that this child moved into a new teacher classroom and said his child performed considerably worse than the year before. Same child.
Okay. So my child's doing worse than the year. Must be the teacher's fault.
It may be.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
I enjoy teaching more than other subjects, and though I've got more energy put into, I think that the grade book could reveal that.
Yes, a couple years ago, I asked my students, I said, what is Mr. Burkholder's favorite subject? They all looked at me like, duh, history. I said, why do you say that? Because history class is always longer than any other class. Yeah, okay. Guilty as charged. Sure. It can show a teacher's preference. There are some subjects I enjoy teaching more than others. Sure. What is a caution about using the grade book? Anybody think of any caution, anything we should be aware of in using that tool? Okay, could be a problem with the curriculum, and we're not going to get into that, which is more important, the teacher or the curriculum. Like, which, you know, you can get a master welder, and you can give about any welder, and he'll make it look nice. He'll do a good job. You give, unless the welder's malfunctioning, but you give an inexperienced person a welder, and it doesn't matter what, you can give them a top-notch welder, and it's going to look like the pigeons were in the area. You know, just.
There's also a way to help your students get 100% on a test, ask them all the questions before the test. And so good grades do not necessarily mean good teaching.
Exactly right. And you as school board need to be aware of that. You hear what he just said? Right before the test, you can ask all the questions on the test, and now give it to them quick before they forget it. Did they actually learn anything? No, they didn't. That's one of the reasons why I don't do that. As a teacher, I want to know, did my students actually get it? So we review the day before, and I don't ask them questions directly out of the test. I look at the textbook, and I ask them questions, and I don't know if they're formulated halfway close to what they are in the test, because I'm testing them. What do you know? A number of years ago, I think it was the fourth year that I was teaching, my co-teacher, I became aware, it was party time. And his grade book was a mess. There were all sorts of gaps. And what was on the report card looked excellent. A couple years later, those students were in my grade, in my classroom, and I asked them, I was just curious, just picking the teenagers' brains, and I asked them, who is your best teacher and who is your worst? And I told them, don't name me either way. But up to this point, who is your best and worst teacher? And then I asked them the question, why? Because I wanted to see what they had to say. Now, maybe I shouldn't have done that, and you can chastise me later for it. That young man's name came up as their worst teacher. You know why? They said, we didn't learn anything. As much as students sometimes fuss about not liking school, especially, you know, boys in seventh, eighth grade, they know why they're there. They know they're there to learn, and they don't want to waste their time. That's the truth. You might have a hard time getting them to admit it, but that's the truth. And so the grade book can be useful, but realize, folks, that the teacher can slide those grades and make it appear to what it is not. So that's where you need to do some digging. You need to ask to see the grade book. Ask to see, where's your lesson plans for this week? What's going on? It's going to be part of your job in evaluating the staff. Well, I'm assuming most of you probably take some sort of achievement test or standardized test of some sort at your school. Yeah? Is that a tool to evaluate the staff? I suppose. Be very cautious with it, though. Remember, it's one day or 2 days out of the year. So you got to be very, very cautious with the results of the achievement test, because it might have been a day when the student just wasn't at their peak. And so don't read too much in. Yes, you can learn some things from achievement tests, but don't read too much into that. So what are some other tools? Have you thought of some?
It is more of a question, but does the length of class period matter with all of this now?
Well, how was it when you were in school? Did the length of the class period matter?
It did.
It did? Explain. They were too long. What happens if they're, in your term, too long?
So I guess the backup question to that is if you have students that are able to actually do their lesson without a class period, does that justify the teacher for not teaching the class?
No.
It sounds pretty obvious, doesn't it?
But right. No, the teacher's there to do his job. And I've had students in my classroom who, they didn't need me. They read the textbook and they knew as much as I did, because they did other reading outside too. They were self-motivated. A teacher, this is why it's important for board members to visit and actually observe the teacher in action, because a teacher can actually defeat students in multiple ways. One of them is by having too short of a class period. And I know in some of our schools where we have multi-grade classroom, the teacher is crunched for time, and you've got to go bangity, 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 bang. I recognize that. And use a board need to decide, you know, how much workload are we going to put on this teacher? Are there classes we can combine? How can we streamline this so that the subject matter can be thoroughly taught? But you can make the class so short that maybe the brightest students have it, but even the average students don't, and the students who struggle more are, I have no idea what he was just talking about. And so, yes, the class length of class, and on the other hand, is you can go blathering on and on and on and on about it and go on all kinds of bunny trails, and the students are frustrated because I know what I'm supposed to do, just let me loose and do it. And so visiting the classroom is certainly one of the tools that you have at your disposal to evaluate the teacher. Anyone else? Yes?
Help the teacher to evaluate themselves.
And how do you do that?
A list of about 22 questions.
Do you have a form that you use at your school?
It's on the top for learning.
Is it really? Okay. I guess there you go.
Uh-huh. In our school, we do video analysis.
So you video the teachers in action?
They video themselves and then discuss it amongst themselves or with a mentor and critique it. That's a form of self-analysis.
So in other words, all of the staff are watching each other? Peer review. Good. Interesting. I'm not sure I could bear to watch myself, but I know a number of years ago, Casby was out at Sugar Creek, and I had a top in one of the main addresses, and after it was put up on the dock, I thought, well, I'm going to listen to it, and I got about 3 minutes into it, and I just was about puking, and so I shut it down. Hopefully that's not how the audience took it. Well, I think if you're going to do something like that, and we have a form that's in our office, and when the school board members come in there to pick one up, and as they visit each classroom, they fill it out and they hand it to us. They also take it to board meeting, I understand. To me as a teacher, I want to know what the board members have to say. And if they say my classroom's messy, yeah, it probably is. The teacher didn't seem on the top of his game today. I want to know that, okay? What I'm saying is you have to develop the teachers have to understand that this is not an attack. We are doing this for your benefit. We want to develop you, and if the teacher has the right spirit that recognize that I am not everything I could be. And I have a burning desire to become what I could be. They're not going to resist that.
I think first and foremost, you need to have a personal relationship. You need to build that personal relationship between board and teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not considered as an affront.
Right.
For me as administrator, when I interview my teachers, when we talk about it, I first have them evaluate me. How have I been doing what you expect me to do? Am I living up to your qualifications as an administrator? And in turn, when I ask them questions, they know firsthand that I'm not merely coming in welding a hammer.
Mm-hmm.
We are working together.
Good point. Good point. Yeah, well, after all, we're in this together, right? Anyone else? Derwin.
I think probably this whole subject, for me, when I first got on the board, was the scariest thing to even think about evaluating a teacher. I was never a school teacher. Or substitute, a little bit when you're sick. That was the scariest thing I ever ran. It's hard to do something that you don't really know anything about. So I think it's excellent of CASB here. We're here educating ourselves with what you're trying to do. Hopefully I'm trying to explain myself. But evaluating somebody or a teacher when you've never been a teacher, that's a really a tough thing to do. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why it's important to have mm-hmm. this discussion. One of the things I had done was give the faculty evaluation sheet of the school board. Let them evaluate the school. You can learn a lot from the faculty. It goes both ways, I think, in this evaluation. It should go both ways. There could be some things that come out where we're not providing our teachers with the right tools. I'm pretty passionate about making sure our teachers have the tools to succeed. I think it's a huge thing. It's hard to come down on teachers, hey, you need to do this, this, and this, while we're tying the one hand behind their back, so to speak. I think it's communication, I think, really boils down to communicating both ways.
And that reminds me of another tool that I have here written on my notes that Derwin is right. You know, there are things, there are fields that I would not building. I can watch a guy build a house. I have no idea if he's doing a good job or not. I don't like building, okay? I'll work with steel, but I don't like working with wood. So I'm not going to be any good at looking at that carpenter and saying, is he a good carpenter? Should he build my house? Okay? There is somebody in your school, though, that you can rely on. We have a principal. He's a teacher, right? He has experience. He knows at least something about teaching, what works and what doesn't. Give him the space, and this year, and I'm not... This year, I'm just busy, busy, busy. I don't have the time. But in past several years, I've made it a point to go around and visit my co-teachers' classrooms. And then after school, I would sit down with them and talk with them about what I observed. Not to criticize them, but to help them grow and to commend them for where they're doing well. You have that tool in your school. The principal, he's there with the teacher all the time. And he knows the students, at least if your school's running well. The teachers come to him with their problems. He knows the situations, maybe knows the families. So use your principal. He can help give you insight onto how your teachers are doing. I would like to talk about evaluating teachers academically. Now, we can evaluate people once they are our teachers, are part of our staff, but we also need to evaluate these people before we actually hire them. So, is it all right to give a prospective teacher a general knowledge, some sort of a proficiency test, and see how they do, and you know, based on this, we'll hire you or we won't? At least in part. Yes? No?
We've never done that. But we've also made a mistake to hire a teacher that had 8 grades of school expected to teach 9th and 10th.
Okay.
Not very much. Mm-hmm.
I also know of a man who had an 8th grade education, not by his own choice, because that's what his parents limited him to. And he has taught high school for more years than I have, and math and science, and he does an excellent job because his education didn't stop when he left 8th grade. He learned himself afterwards. He taught himself because he had a desire to. So you can't just go on, does somebody have, and what level of education? I remember a number of years ago, one of my former students I heard was hired to teach at another school. And this young lady, fine young lady, but wow, ninth grade was just an absolute struggle for her. And I wonder how this is gonna go. I need not have worried. She was teaching third and fourth grade. What was it? Three of our children had her? Two. She was one of the best teachers our younger children ever had. How a person performed when they were a student in school does not necessarily say what sort of a teacher they're going to be. You want one of my school was. Oh, I'm not saying this to brag. I'm just telling you the facts. School was too easy for me. I didn't even have to work. I got low to mid 90s, and looking back, I'm frustrated because if I'd actually applied myself, I could have learned a whole lot more, and I could have had upper 90s. Okay. But one of the struggles that I have with as a teacher is with students who don't get it. Even after the third or fourth time I say it, and I'm trying from this angle, from that. It's simple. I don't know why you don't get it. But you know, some of those students who struggled in school make some of the best teachers. You know why? Because they had to think it through and find the pathway through the forest that came to the prize. And they can relate to those students who are struggling. And so don't just, in evaluating your staff, don't just look at IQ, you know, what their achievement test scores were when they were a student, because that's not just it. Albert Einstein was quite an intelligent man. He was not that great of a student. His take on it was, as an adult, he said, "My teachers thought I was stupid. The problem was when she was talking, I was thinking about things that she probably never thought of." His mind was going off down paths. He was thinking, and you know, when you study a little bit into his special theory of relativity and you get to time dilation and length contraction and mass increasing, you're like, wow, how did, I have no idea. And you know what Albert Einstein said? He said, with science, you have two possibilities. You can either dumb it down to the point that the general public thinks they understand it, when in reality they don't understand the first thing about it, or else you can tell it in its entirety and you're just, and they have no idea. You can actually have a teacher who's a whiz academically, but can't actually teach. Do you know what it means to teach?
It's the ability to impart your knowledge to someone else.
To cause to learn. To cause to learn. And so did the student, do they actually know something? You know the trick? I'd say the trick. That's not the right word. The point of teaching is, as Doug said, to transfer what's up here to you.
It's called working yourself out of a job.
There you go. Exactly. Exactly. I have this thing. You know, my students, I tease them sometimes. You folks are Americans. You want everything easy. I'm not an answer key. So I learned this a couple months ago from a fellow I had heard giving this talk. He said he makes this deal with his students. I'll do your work for you if I can also decide what car you drive when you get out of school, choose where you're going to work, choose who you're going to date, where you're going to live, and suddenly they're not interested. Okay, then it's your work to do. Do it. You know, I'm not an answer key. I'm here to help you understand the concept. Okay? So that you can get it, that you know something. So just because somebody has a head full of knowledge does not mean they are a teacher. Because if you cannot convey it to the students in a way that they're going to grasp it. You haven't taught anything. And so, think about the person. And this that part comes in kind of with the social part. Do they have a way of relating to people on their level? I'm glad I teach high school. They're nearly adults. I can relate to them that way. I enjoy that. I have taught over the years 7th and 8th grade history class and music class, and it's okay. But, you know, 7th and 8th graders are too big to be little and too little to be big. And there's just something about my personality and that that doesn't go together. And, you know, it's just so... Yeah, you need to be honest about your teachers and, you know, evaluating them. Do they have the skills to reach this age group? Like I was saying earlier, sometimes it's just misplaced assets. Maybe they're not the best in 7th and 8th. Maybe they can better relate to 5th and 6th graders. And maybe academically they can handle that better too. Well, fine, doesn't mean you throw them away. Because after all, teachers are hard to get out of here. Yes?
Is there a good way to evaluate?
Ah, that's a good question. Is there a good way to evaluate? Well, what are they already doing? Have they taught Sunday school class? Those sorts of things. Because that's, you know, if it's a brother, when they have devotionals at church, how does that go? Do they have coherent thoughts?
I was thinking from the viewpoint that maybe from a different community, you don't know them.
Then you have to ask. Don't know how you get. And you hope that the people are being honest with you.
Calling their pastor is a good way to start. Facebook, social media, there is some things like that that is important to investigate. Mm-hmm. When you're talking to somebody, you have no prior contact with.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So with that being said, how much vetting do you do before you even reach out to them and see if they're interested?
So what if you ask them and then you do your vetting and realize that, oops, my personal opinion is you'd better do that before you even, because otherwise there's going to be hard feelings. Now, I know that sometimes, I don't know how pointed your questions are in your interview, but there are times where things come up in the interview that you realize, well, this isn't actually a good fit after all. But I think those ought to be as few as possible. Because there could be hard feelings, and you don't want to waste your time either. Time is of the essence. Well, we have just a few minutes yet. What would you like to say yet? Questions?
I wonder, do we as a board know what we're looking for when we hire teachers?
That's something you as a board have to decide. What exactly, and you know, the balance between those three aspects, the academic, the social, and the spiritual, and, you know, recognizing that there's probably not going to be anybody that's just a 10 on all of those.
But the thought I have is, if we don't specifically know what we're looking for, it's hard to evaluate when we're
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or
yeah, and the you know, some teachers are more focused on getting the information to the students. Some teachers tend to focus more on getting to know the students and relating to them. I tend to be more of the content. My co-teacher who's teaching in 7th and 8th grade, he tends to be more on the social aspect of it. And he's, what is he, I don't know, 20, something like that. He's closer to their age. Maybe that has something to do with it, I don't know, but probably it has more to do with our personalities. And they're, each teacher needs to know too where they are in that and recognize that, yes, a relationship with your students is important. It's hard to teach well without that, but you don't let that get in the way of the actual learning either. So yeah, each board has to know, your school has to know what exactly do you want. There's one more tool that I'd like to give you that you can use to evaluate teachers. It's sitting in the same chair that you are. You are a tool in evaluating. God gave you a brain. Maybe you were never a teacher, but there are still some things with the guidance of the Holy Spirit you can walk in there. You know, Peter, when he went to Samaria and Simon the sorcerer was there, I doubt whether he had ever met Simon the sorcerer before. But Simon said, give me that power. I'll pay you money for it. And Peter, through the indwelling of the Holy Spirit, said, Simon, I perceive that you're in the gall of bitterness. And I think that if we have, as adults, if we have a direct connection with God through His Spirit, we can look into the lives of our students and discern what's in their heart. You can evaluate teachers even if you've never taught before. There are just some things that if you have your antenna up, you're going to notice. You're going to notice. So don't say, well, I don't know anything, so I'm not going to go into school and look because I don't know what I'd be looking at anyway. You're still going to be able to get some sort of a sense of what's going on there. Is this order? Is it chaos? Does the teacher fumble around, or do they really know their stuff? You'll see look, and hopefully your teachers do, at the end of class, get some kind of feedback from the students. Listen, how much of that do the students actually know? Is it right there, or are they still fumbling around? You'll be able to tell if the teacher's doing a good job or not. Well, thank you for coming. I hope this workshop was to your benefit. And God bless you as you serve in your community.